This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums, and with me to help us understand history and what has happened before and what hasn't happened is our good friend, our history doctor, Bill Smith. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Let's talk about something that is happening now in Arkansas and see how it relates to things that have happened in the past. In Arkansas in particular, but across all of the country, the impact of spending in political campaigns by these very rich individuals like the Koch brothers has become an issue with those concerned about buying influence. Media and pundits are railing at the unprecedented spending by one or two wealthy individuals. Harry Reid, Democratic Senator of Nevada, is calling for a constitutional amendment to distinguish that money is not a part of free speech. So help me put this in perspective, Bill. Have we seen this sort of thing before?
Oh, yes, we have. So this time around, the Democrats are wailing about the Koch brothers, those evil, I think you have to say it with that certain term, evil Koch brothers. Let's just think back a scant 4 to 6 years ago. The Republicans were crying about George Soros.
But George Soros doesn't go back that far. So this is what you're saying, still a pretty recent development?
Technically, yes. This is the result of the latest attempt to take money out of the political system that started in the Watergate era with the Federal Election Commission, a direct response to Richard Nixon's fundraising via the Committee to Re-elect the President, the prophetically named CREEP. Realistically, we've been buying and selling senators in this particular way for decades.
Regulating contributions is a relatively new political endeavor.
Well, until the 1972 campaign and its excesses and Richard Nixon, we didn't see the creation of the federally regulated, federally empowered commission that we have today. It started in 1974 with its first ever limits on individual contributions. Of course, McCain-Feingold tried to take that further in 2002, but that's been the subject of the recent Supreme Court decision.
Yes, before, and some might say with those decisions now, there seem to be no limits.
Fair to say. But the way federal and other office holders raise their money has shifted a bit. You see, political patronage used to be the way that you would get elected to office and fund your campaign. It was a staple of the federal government, doling out appointments for, say, the local postmaster on return for an assessment from their patrons, which could be as much as 15 to 20% of your federal salary going right back to the person that appointed you. A post-Civil War bill in 1876 finally removed the military from such payments, but it took the assassination of President James Garfield to bring an end to this spoil system at the federal level with the Pendleton Act in 1883. Now, that didn't stop those with means from buying influence, but it stopped those with the power to appoint from getting their money from smaller individuals.
So post-assassination of President Garfield, what was the system?
Well, the 19th century was the era of, we like to call it, the railroad senators. So named because of the influence wielded by those great corporations and the captains of industry who owned this new transportation system. Jay Cook, Cornelius Vanderbilt, Jay Gould, the Astors, they all worked to gain special favors from representatives. One of the great historical scandals of American politics involves Credit Mobilier, mm-hmm. a financing agent for the Transcontinental Railroad, that handed out free shares or greatly discounted shares to members of the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. Notably, Roscoe Conkling of New York and Ulysses S. Grant's vice president, Shirley Colfax. Even Garfield, the man who kind of starts some of this reform by his assassination, when Representative Garfield faced charges of $3.29, that was the value of the shares that he received while he was in Congress when he ran for president, even he couldn't escape Credit Mobilier's scandal.
But it wasn't just railroads, right?
No, industries that had a particular power in a state were highly influential in choosing who would represent their state. Remember, the 19th century was the age before the direct election of U.S. senators. So a senator, Philetus Sawyer of Wisconsin, was a timber senator. And Senator Aldrich of Rhode Island was the Standard Oil senator. One difference, you could argue, is that the robber barons like Jay Gould were a little more agnostic in their politics than some of the wealthy individuals you see motivated to support just one party as they do today. Gould, understood the bottom line, and these were his words. "It was the custom when men received nominations to come to me for contributions, and I made them and considered them good-paying investments for the company. In a Republican district, I was a strong Republican. In a Democratic district, I was Democratic. And in doubtful districts, I was doubtful. In politics, I was an Erie Railroad man all the time."
Okay, so if timber had interest and other things had interest, why was the label railroad senators? Why did that stick?
Well, in part, it was because of a showdown between Theodore Roosevelt and a group of senators who were particularly beholden to the railroads in 1906 over the Hepburn Act. Remember, Teddy was the progressive reformer of his day, and with the backing of Republicans, his trust-busting moves were great, until he started to press the railroads. That's where some of his friends drew the line. Collier's Magazine wrote, quote, "The mask is off. The railroad senators, bitter in defeat, have thrown political judgment to the winds and allied themselves against President Roosevelt. These same railroad senators, corporate representatives, advised him not to recommend a pure good legislation to Congress because it would injure their vested interest." So the media became involved in joining up with Roosevelt against these bought and sold politicians. However, while Collier's had a lot to do with this, nothing trumpeted the series that was in Cosmopolitan.
Cosmopolitan? The magazine,
yes.
The magazine I now see in the grocery aisle that offers 20 great sex tips. That Cosmopolitan?
Yes, one and the same. At the turn of the 20th century, America was filled with these new forms of media that commissioned long-form journalism to attack the problems of the day. Cosmopolitan was one of these new magazines before it became a forum for Katy Perry. It was the product of William Randolph Hearst, and a nine-part series known as Treason of the Senate became the key in exposing how these senators were on boards of directors for various companies nowhere near their home states. Influences that their allegiances were with these industries and bought through the lucrative salaries and benefits they received. So you might have a corporation that operates in Delaware that has a Californian senator on their board. They're getting a significant payment for being a board member, and funny how they seem to always line up with the interests of those corporations that they were on the boards of. So in a 1907 State of the Union address, Teddy Roosevelt, dismayed that there were no laws to, in his words, hamper an unscrupulous man of unlimited means from buying his own way into office, proposed a type of public funding for campaigns that many of today's advocates would seem to think is very familiar and very much in line with what they wanted to see happen. You know, one little side note, it's this series of articles, The Treason of the Senate, by David Graham Phillips, that inspired Roosevelt to come up with the term that's used to this day for that style of journalism. Teddy Roosevelt's the one that named it muckraking.
Every time there has been, whether it was through journalists or a president or civic-minded people, every time there's been an attempt to take the influence of money out of elections, out of politics, it seems that there's been an end around. So what's left?
Well, I think Utah Senator Mo Udall recalled in his book on politics the advice of a fellow Democratic senator. Henry Ashurst of Arizona gave him this sage advice. "When you have to choose between voting for the people or the special interests, always stick to special interests. They remember, the people forget."
Well, until Karl Rove decides to work pro bono,
we're history.
Bill Smith, our history doctor, is a regular visitor to Ozarks at Large. Fayetteville Public Library continues its adult lecture series, Literary Elements, this coming Monday evening at 6:30 with Brain Music, How the Brain Works in Health and Disease, presented by Dr. Edgar Garcia Rill. This event is free. More information is available at faylib.org.